Hello, and welcome to One Lutheran, One Jew, One Hour. I'm Sue Belita, Lutheran pastor at Resurrection Lutheran Church.
I'm Rabbi Dov Gartenberg, rabbi living in Juneau.
And this is the first of what we hope will be many conversations around issues of faith. You and I have had many conversations, and we thought
many,
and we thought it would be fun to share those and invite people in. There aren't a lot of places to have civil conversations about religious topics, and we thought this might be a good idea.
Yeah, this is an opportunity to really engage in topics, questions that you may have been afraid to ask. Some depth conversation on religion and its relationship to our lives today.
I would, however, say that one caveat that we bring to the microphone is that we do not speak for all Lutherans or all Jews across all time, across all contexts, but we do bring our own experiences and our own selves to this conversation and our understandings and our disagreements.
Absolutely. Now, we hope we are a spark for conversation and for people to share their thoughts and unique opinions.
Well, one way I thought that we could introduce people to our topics and our conversations is to talk about ourselves a little bit. So, Dov, have you always been a Jew?
As long as I remember. But
and a little bit before.
I was born into a Jewish family and raised as a Reformed Jew, actually. I'm not a Reformed Jew, at least by my training as a rabbi, but I grew up in a strongly identified Reformed Jewish home. I can explain a little bit.
That would be great. Are there categories of Jews?
There are denominations of Jews. The most well-known denominations are Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of variety within each of those denominations. There's also another one called Reconstructionist. I can add some more, but I don't want to make the show go too long.
So you were raised as a Reformed Jew.
So Reform is on the liberal spectrum. Conservative in the middle, and Orthodox is the most traditional. So I was raised as Reform, and when I became a rabbi, or when I chose to become a rabbi, I chose to go to the Conservative Rabbinical Seminary. So I, essentially, a conservative Jew, strong connections to the Reform community, and also I have strong connections to the Orthodox community as well.
So, what does it mean to live as a conservative Jew?
Well, conservative is a centrist movement. So, the things that Jews debate when they talk about religion are about observance of the commandments and Jewish traditions that are practiced. And there's a very wide variety of opinions and disagreements about how much of the tradition is preserved, how much of the tradition is we use a word like anachronistic. Conservative means to conserve tradition. So it's a modern movement. It's a liberal movement in the sense of a movement that has adopted reforms like women rabbis. But it is more traditional, say, than reform. That's a very broad statement. Sometimes there's a lot of harmony, and sometimes there are disagreements on how much should be practiced.
Hmm. Okay.
And yourself? Where do you find yourself within the... Tell us about your background and the role of Lutheranism.
I was born into a Lutheran family, although my mother was raised Methodist because that was the only church that was in our village. And so when she married my dad... He was a multi-generational heritage Lutheran religion, faith, traditions had been passed down in his family for many generations. And so my mom became a Lutheran before I was born. So I was born into that Lutheran tradition and raised entirely in that. I mean, the family taught Sunday school, and I went through all of the steps of baptism and confirmation, which are particular celebrations and rites within the Lutheran Church. As I look back now, it's sort of an interesting thing for myself as a little girl growing up in a church. There weren't any female role models in pastoral leadership. They were Sunday school teachers, certainly, and confirmation leaders, those kinds of things. But as a little girl growing up, I was drawn to female religious representational leadership in terms of what was available to me, and that was nuns. Mm. So Sally Field is the flying nun, and the trouble with angels, and even Mary Tyler Moore and Elvis Presley as nuns. So I was actually a little bit shattered when I found out you had to be Catholic to be a nun, that I couldn't be a Lutheran and be a nun.
Can I ask a question connected to that?
Sure.
Why doesn't Lutheranism have a monastic tradition?
There actually has been a developed monastic tradition, so it's not entirely correct to say that there were not Lutheran nuns. There were a group of nuns who were very particular. So it was not a widely expressed way of living that. But the monastic tradition for both men and women has grown in recent years.
So you found yourself, what made you choose a life of a clergy person?
For me, it's a second career. The Lutheran Church did start ordaining women in 1970. So by the time I got around to acknowledging that call, that nudge, I had already been in my first career for over 25 years. But the role of women as clergy had become well established. So by the time I went to seminary, it was really not much of an issue. Although my class at seminary was the first class to have a majority of women in the class. So we're making our mark. Women obviously have a voice. But I will also say, when I said my denomination, Lutheran also has many expressions. And so I am a member of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which does ordain women. There are two other major expressions in the United States: the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church, which does not ordain women, and the Wisconsin Synod, which also does not ordain women.
Mm-hmm. So you found your way into the life of the clergy, and you tell us about where you serve and how you serve.
Well, it's an interesting, you and I had this conversation a little bit. As a second career person, this is my first congregation. I've just started my eighth year in my first call. So my first congregation.
A call means, for those who don't know what that is.
A call means a joining together of a pastor in leadership and a congregation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not hired. We're not employees. We are called into a congregation to be their leadership. And so I've just started my eighth year with Resurrection Lutheran Church, which many in the community know, downtown on 10th and Glacier. It's a community center. There we have a food bank. Gold Street has concerts there. Many people use our facility for a variety of community meetings and for music rehearsals and recitals. So it's a pretty well-known hot spot downtown. But you said you have been a pastor or a rabbi for a number of congregations.
Well, I started out in my late 20s when I finished rabbinical school, and I first served in Los Angeles, but spent most of my career as a congregational rabbi in Seattle, in North Seattle near the university. And then for the latter part of my career, I actually ventured on my own to start a Jewish educational outreach organization, which was a really wonderful experience, and still have some. I'm still doing parts of that work, and then went back to Los Angeles to serve a congregation before coming up here with my wife. And now I do help the congregation. There is a congregation in Juneau. I help the congregation, their religious school, and some other things. But I also do some other Jewish outreach activities, and I have a class, a statewide class, Introduction to Judaism, remote, using Skype, group Skype. So
welcome to Alaska. We find lots of ways of connecting, right?
Yes, we do.
One of the things we want to do this evening, after you've gotten to know us a little bit, is to invite you as listeners to call. So as we introduce our topic and do some informal conversation about our specific topic for this evening, we will invite you to call in. The number is 463-6455. If you have a question or a comment regarding our topic tonight, which is, does religion have a role in today's society?
So remember, for call-in, and we're going to start the topic, and we'll announce when we'll do call-in, is 463-6455. So our topic again, does religion have a role in today's society? So what's your view on that?
Well, as we bandied this about as our first topic, we kind of giggled because we started out with, does religion have a role? And obviously, we believe that that answer is yes. So then it gets a little more tricky in defining what might that role be in today's society. What role is there for religious expression in today's society? And so we've talked about a number of things, so I'll just put a couple of them out there and we can talk mm-hmm. about them, or you can put some things out there. There is something about, in today's society, how, for as connected as we are, we have lost a lot of interconnectedness in terms of relationship and community. And so I do think that religion is a place where there is communal gathering. There's an intentional relationship. So I think that's one jumping off point about a place that a function that religion serves in today's society. I do think there's something very profound, too, about how religion shapes this notion that there is something larger outside of yourself. And whether that thing is a higher power or whether that thing is another person, what function of religion or a role that it has is that it makes you to look beyond yourself, to see the other, whether it's a transcendent other or whether it's an other in need. But it does connect us to others.
Those are wonderful insights. Let me try and put them in another way, just to deepen
sure.
the discussion. So, in a sense, religion can provide community for people who would ordinarily, without it, would be disconnected, or could be disconnected. Although there are many ways to bring people together, that religion has sort of unique possibilities of community and a shared action.
It is an intentional time and an mm-hmm. intentional practice of habit, of mm-hmm. of making at this time in, of my week, I will go and be among these people.
Right.
And so the question then is, you can beg that question a little bit, how does that function any differently than a bridge club or a volunteer
association?
Rotary, yeah. exactly, or
right.
Moose, or those kinds of things. So how does religion take that need for community and make it particular?
I think that's an important question. And sometimes I think in my tradition in Judaism we talk about the synagogue. There's a name for it called Kehila Kadosha. That is the holy congregation. There are congregations of all sorts. There's sports clubs. There's associations, there's do-gooders clubs, all very important in our society.
Hiking clubs and so forth. Sure.
Right, but there's a notion of the holy community. This is to link what you were talking about something larger, we can call it transcendence, is that it's a community that is attempting together to create a sense of transcendence. So you would share life cycles. You share beginning of life, end of life. You share common festivals. You share common practices and rituals, and often share common beliefs within a range of beliefs. So the connecting community becomes connected to transcendence, makes religion something powerful.
And tradition. I mean, mm-hmm. there certainly is an element of tradition, of ritual, of
right
marking, of milestone marking, that can also, however, be found in a good Girl Scout troop. So
right. I mean, I think all those elements. Someone once told me that they're really against ritual. And I says, "Aren't you a baseball fan?" I says, "Yeah." I says, "Well, isn't there ritual in baseball?" You know. So the question is, what's the difference between and I'm a baseball fan, by the way. We're both baseball fans.
I'm just a little bit of a baseball fan. Go Cubs!
but there's something, I mean, what's the difference, how do you differentiate between, the ritual of religion and the ritual of a game? That's a fascinating question. But I think just talking personally, I mean, one of the main things that my religion does is it really creates a calendar. A calendar that's quite intricate, a weekly Sabbath. So every Friday night we'll have a dinner and we'll invite guests. There are prayer times. There are festivals that mark the calendar. where we associate different foods or different activities. And another thing that's interesting about you know, community is that my communal calendar is really very different from other people's calendars. So I might have to take a day off from work to observe one of my festivals.
Sure.
This is a particular, you know, issue for Jews, is that our calendar isn't necessarily in sync with, well, how most of the religious communities around us, primarily Christians, observe, you know, do their calendar. So one thing about being a Jew is you have, I don't know, you would say a commitment to a calendar, but you're committed to the community would make your calendar different, and doing the calendar makes you feel connected to a particular community. So it actually works both ways.
You know, one thing I also find that's different, I was playing a little bit of the push-pull to put out some of those questions that people might ask or some of the arguments that people have given.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I particularly love about the community of a congregation is that a lot of times when you get into social groups, you gather together like-minded people. And with a congregation, I always say, we can't agree on what pizza topping to order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we cover a wide span of social expectations. We have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have rich, we have poor, we have male, we have female, we have young, we have old, we have, you know, one of everything. And it's not about necessarily being socially agreeable, but it's about having something else that we're centered around, something that gathers us together in the midst of our diversity, in the midst of our disagreement, that allows us to come together and say, it matters that, you know, if I were to meet you in a party, you probably would not be a person that I would want to continue a relationship with. But because you're a member of my congregation, I see you with a different lens, mm-hmm. and we work together in a different way. So it actually draws together people who may not be socially agreeable, but who have a different center, who come together in the faith tradition to live and work together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful point about the unique nature of congregational religious communities. And one of the reasons, too, that they can be divisive, because even though they share common beliefs or practices, you know, you may have people who have, you know, wide differences over politics or other types of social issues.
Absolutely.
And also within each tradition, of course, there are different and often opposing denominations. So that's another element. And many people do have negative associations with religion in the sense of experiencing some sort of division in the congregation they grew up in or in their experience with their religious tradition growing up.
One of the things that we're hoping to do as we continue is to continue these conversations,
mm-hmm.
and a variety of topics have already presented themselves to us, and being hurt by the church is certainly something that we thought would be worth another conversation at some point.
Right.
And so, yes, that is a reality. That there is also, I think, one of the challenges we face as religious leaders is that there's this hope and expectation that somehow the people who will gather together will be something better than a normal social gathering or another group. That because we are coming together around issues of faith and around whatever our higher part, God or Jesus or Holy Spirit, that somehow we will be elevated as people and that we will act better towards one another. And in reality, we are all broken people who are gathered together.
Right.
And that brokenness sometimes gets expressed badly. And sometimes that brokenness can be, the community can be a place for healing of that brokenness. But I do think that that's one thing that challenges us as religious institutions or organizations, that there's this hope that we'll be somehow better than the average person, when, in fact, we're created out of a whole gathering of average people.
Right. I mean, there's a wonderful teaching within the Jewish tradition about three things are The world is based on three things, and it's Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim in Hebrew, meaning Torah study, the study of the sacred traditions and texts. The Avodah is worship, the gathering for prayer and for spiritual expression together. And the third one is Gemilut Chasadim, or acts of loving kindness toward mm-hmm. each other. And then the text goes on to say that, well, no one is good at all three. Usually we're better at one, and maybe sometimes at two, and a great, a tzaddik, a great saint, is maybe good at all three. But communities come together to, bring all these types of people who may be good at one, and by bringing them together, you can be good at all three.
Right, that's excellent. Yeah. We talk about people having a variety of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this one's good at teaching, this one's good at
sure.
working with kids, this one's good at stocking the food bank. Everybody has the things that they can contribute to make the fullness of the congregation.
Right. I want to talk about another role of religion, and that is channeling goodness communally. We talk about in Jewish tradition is tikkun olam, is repairing the world. And that one of the reasons that you belong to a congregation or a synagogue congregation is to gather together collectively to do good. Tzedakah in Hebrew, which we often misunderstood as charity, means actually doing the right thing. And it's much more powerful when you're banded together to do the right thing than to do it individually. And we can all do it individually, but that there is this collective experience of doing good and of learning the nuances of good. What happens when you have two goods that collide and you have to make a decision? So in Jewish tradition, there is actually a really great emphasis on understanding ethical dilemmas and how you choose different two goods when you're confronted by that situation.
Right,
obviously turning away from evil or bad, but also when you have to make decisions on priorities. And I think that all religious communities, when they're functioning at their highest level, are channeling goodness and are engendering goodness, are cultivating goodness, are teaching goodness to children. Sometimes gets lost, a very important aspect.
It can be, it's certainly an expression, a point of conversation for many denominations in the Protestant, Catholic, Christian panoply, because the question around those works is, how are we then saved? Are we saved because we do these works,
mm-hmm.
or do we do these works because we are already saved? And so that's sort of one of the arguments that has created separation and division across a lot of denominational expressions. Certainly, I think all religions believe that there is a need to care for the other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. And so how do we do that? Caring for the other is doing a good work. But what's the motivation and purpose of that good work? Is the purpose because it's a commandment? Is it a purpose because it's a path of salvation? Is it a purpose because we just love and care for each other?
Or so, is it a way to the next world?
Right. So there,
for some religions.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because obviously in today's American society, we go back to the 1,000 points of light,
mm-hmm.
which was an invitation for religious institutions and organizations to help be the safety net that the government could not provide. And I think churches and congregations have long served
mm-hmm.
those purposes in terms of food banks and clothing help and
absolutely.
Finding homelessness and, so many large issues that are beyond the scope of one civic organization or one arm of government, but that requires a lot of contributing factors.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think congregations play a role in that.
Absolutely. So I Should we turn it, if there are any callers, we want to make open that time that you can call in if you want.
Feel free if you have a question or a comment about the role that religion has in today's society, or a question just in general for Rabbi Dove or myself, Pastor Sue. Go ahead and give us a call. The number is 463-6455. A lot of conversation today about, and this is something that we also talked about another maybe another hour, but the difference between spiritual and religious. Do you want to get into that a little bit?
Sure. And actually, I think it's very common in our time for people to say they're spiritual, but I'm not religious. That's something I hear a lot. Or there's a very negative view of organized religion is a negative term for many people. This is a rich subject, so I'll take a dive into it. At least within Jewish tradition, there really isn't a term for spirituality as such. I mean, there's lots of terms for religious intensity or piety, and they're very culture specific in Judaism, as they would be in any tradition. But generally, the word for religious, and there's actually in Hebrew no word for religious, except for modern coined terms like dati. But it's dati in traditional Hebrew is not religious. So how do you say someone's the closest thing you can say to someone is religious is shomer mitzvot, someone who guards the commandments. So generally, the way we talk about a religious person as opposed to a secular person, and I'll tell you the word for secular in Hebrew in a moment, is that a person someone who's religious is someone who's a guardian of whatever aspect of the tradition you want to name, commandments, the Sabbath, dietary laws. But the word for secular in Hebrew is chol, which comes from the word sand. It usually means the opposite of holiness. It's not that it means common. Sand is common. So a chiloni, a secular Jew, is someone who has rejected holiness, as it were, as a basis for living, and has accepted common things as a way to live. So it's a very different framework for understanding, and say we use the word secular or and religious in this society. So it has a very different connotation for the Hebrew ear. So someone's a guardian and someone's chosen to be common.
All right, and we've got our caller, so go ahead. First caller, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My name's Lisa, and I live in Juneau. And the original question was religion and its role in community. And a slight step from there, even if I just want to put in the terms for myself, I'm thinking, I am a Lutheran and moved from the Midwest to this area alone, and I don't have family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that congregations of all denominations are available, because they lead persons to find maybe what they need in support and common with their community. And I found, because I was raised Lutheran, I found many congregations that kind of fit me, and I found a couple of people I knew in each one. Now I have the choice of deciding, where do I feel most comfortable in understanding who I'm with? And the short of it is, I think it provides a family away from maybe your original place that you were in safe with.
Right.
And I think congregations of all denominations provide a safe new family for some people. And that is exactly what I teach to my kids. When they are grown, they will have some common understanding of other religions or of other Lutherans, if they travel away from here, they'll know that that is their family too in some sense. They'll be understood.
Thanks, Lisa. That's a really good point, especially for Alaska. So many of us here are away from our families who are down south somewhere. And so because of the transient nature or the unique nature sometimes of Alaska and Juneau particularly, that need to create a home away from home, a family away from family, is an excellent way that church can fill that need.
Thank you.
And just to add to your question is, do you choose a church based on the social relations that you make, or do you choose a church for doctrinal reasons? Are there certain beliefs sensibilities or attitudes that are important to you and trump social relations? And I think actually for most people, in my experience as a rabbi, I think that they will choose a congregation where they feel they're compatible, people they like, where they have, whether it's common cause or simply just enjoying the people they're with. There's an old Jewish joke about a secular Jew would come to synagogue, and the rabbi asks, "Why are you here? You don't believe in God." He says, "Well, I don't come here for God. I come here to be with Lipschitz." So that's a valid reason in which to choose to be part of a community as well.
Great.
As doctrinal
Thanks for
reasons.
Your call, Lisa.
Thank you.
Do you know, I think following up on that a little bit too, there is this notion of or something that's developed in a way that is relatively new, and that's the idea of church shopping. Of going to a congregation, which may or may not be the tradition that you grew up with, but you go and you see, do I like this pastor? You know, is the service, does it last 59 minutes, or does it last, an hour and a half? Or, you know, do I like the singing? Do they have an organ? Do they have good coffee? You know, there has been sort of this shift of congregate becoming a consumer.
Oh, yes. We call it, in the larger Jewish communities, we call it shul shopping.
Okay. And we call it church shopping.
Shul is another word. It's a Yiddish word for synagogue. And actually, the Jewish paper in Seattle a few years ago actually had articles about synagogues, and they had ratings that people could submit, much to the chagrin of the rabbis, I might add.
I'm sure.
That they said, so they had a number of different, including how good was the food after services. So we thought
it's a critical factor for
people. It was a very popular series, and so people could really speak out about the synagogues. And
I can see a new food. Capital City Weekly column.
But that is true, and I think one of the problems with that, of course, is that there are that the shopping is very consumer oriented, and people sort of asking, "What can I get?
What can the community give to me,
opposed to what can I give the community?"
Right.
I think on the deepest level, communities are places where we can sacrifice, where we give of our time, give of our money, we give of our spirit. And that's when they become really powerful, is that we really feel that it's a place for us to sacrifice and transcend.
There's a real power in engagement that doesn't have to be entertainment. And
right.
There's been a lot of conversation, I'm sure, and the clergy things that you've read about, do we as a congregation, do we need to put on a good show? Do we have to have good entertainment to keep people involved? And is that the role that the church plays today, that, if people are going to give of their time, then by golly, they should get something out of it? Well, entertainment is a way of doing that. I just don't particularly find that to be the most fruitful way. As you said, that when it becomes something deeper and richer, there is a more powerful connection, I think.
Mm-hmm. So tell me more about how a little bit more history about the Lutheran faith and how it's sort of how it, you know, coming from Europe and it's part of the Reformation. What
right.
are some of the key things that people should know about Lutheranism?
Well, you know, at one point there was a Catholic church, and Catholic, the word itself means universal. And so if you were something other than Jewish or of the Eastern traditions, if you were a Western worshiping person, then you were a Catholic because that was the whole church. And so there's this universality to it. And there was this fiery priest, Martin Luther, who wanted not to split from the church. That was never his intention. But he saw some ways that the church was going sideways. And I think there are those people in every time and every age. I mean, in Scripture we have those people who are prophets who point to where the people are going not according to what they understand is the correct way. And so Martin Luther wanted to have kind of what we're having. He wanted to have conversation. And so he wrote out his conversation points about where he saw that the church was not being faithful to Scripture and to what God intended, that it has become its own self-serving proposition. And self-examination is a difficult thing. Mm-hmm. For a person or an institution. And interestingly enough, it was a time when the Catholic Church itself did do some self-examination and did make some of the reforms that Luther suggested. But by the time that process happened, there had been this separation, this division. And so Luther became the first Protestant, the one who protested against what the Catholic mm-hmm. Church did. And I always say that's such a gift and it's such a blessing. In one way, it taught us that when we do not agree, we can be made new. We can start something fresh. But we took that idea and we've divided ourselves over and over and over and over again so that we have lots of Christian expressions and denominations today. So Martin Luther was sort of the ignition for that. A very real, lively, sometimes very wrong, sometimes very passionate kind of guy who never meant to become the founder of a church.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Those were some interesting questions that we had from people when we were kind of having that conversation before. And again, that's why I say I'm here to represent, one little slice of the pie of the Lutheran Church. And again, as we continue to hope to continue to have these conversations, the notion of inviting other faith leaders into the conversation to broaden that is certainly one of our goals. And so we're hoping that you as listeners, if you're inspired, you'll give us a call with a question, but also that you would let us know here at the station if you appreciate this sort of conversation as part of our community forum, that we could continue to do that. So we appreciate your feedback. I would like to go back to, I'm hogging this just a little bit, but the conversation about spirituality versus being
That's
religious.
Right.
One of the things that troubles me about that, not only I think it creates this false dichotomy, because I believe a religious person can be spiritual and that a spiritual person can be religious. And it seems like it's one of those phrases that we've allowed to harden as a separateness, that spirituality is this thing that has no connection or overlap with religion, and religion is this thing that has no connection or overlap with spirituality. And I worry about that it creates this distance or this otherness that I'm not sure either expression meant to have in the first place.
Well, I do think people use spirituality also as a implicit critique of religious, of organized religion. I'll give you some examples. Say, my spirituality is to go out in nature, which...
Actually, let me hold on, because we have a
caller.
Hold that example.
Hold on to that. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a resident of Juneau, and I'm calling, and one of the things that you've discussed is that being part of a church community is, it's a connection to others, and it's a community effort at transcendence. And I know that a lot of times with all the different denominations, it seems like being involved in a religion is more of a separateness or a defining yourself rather than a communal exercise. And I guess with all the differences between your beliefs and practices, I'm wondering, is there a connection across denominations and across different religions, or do you see yourselves as very separate, and that people's effort at transcendence will only be right if it believes in one of your ways?
Thanks for that question.
Good question.
That is a great question. And I'm sure, depending on who you talk to, you'll get very different answers, not necessarily between Rabbi Dove and myself.
No, we might have separate answers.
And we might.
Or different answers.
But I'm sure that there are, that you've encountered those who say, because we believe this way so completely and that this is the only way or the only path to salvation or to transcendence, that they're very hungry and encouraging for you to become a part of that separate way. That's not my personal understanding, and that's not the way that I live out my faith. In fact, I believe that our scripture and our tradition calls for us to be connected in greater and deeper ways, that in fact that's the whole point, is seeing that we are not people defined by boundaries, but that the whole purpose of what we do as a congregation is to break down those barriers. I'll give you a chance to respond and then maybe come back to it.
I like to use the word particular as opposed to separate. There are, I'm going to speak of Judaism because it's the religion I know best, but in Judaism there are Jewish religious groups that are quite particularistic in that the way they understand their practice is so particular that they really end up separating themselves pretty emphatically from not only non-Jews but even other Jews. I have ultra-Orthodox nephews, actually nephews and nieces in Israel, and actually we maintain contact, but with great difficulty because of the way they practice Judaism is such that we can only do things on their turf, not on my turf, and I'm an observant Jew, but they're so strict. So there is, in a sense, a separateness. I'll give you an example, actually, just because I think it's illustrative, and it would apply to other religions that are particularistic, but also have universal ideas in them. So I observe the Jewish dietary laws. Now, by observing them, my diet is different than the norm. I can't go to Tracy's Crab Shack.
Right.
Right. It's just because you don't eat seafood. It's not. I don't. As an observant Jew. Now I know many other Jews who do, and that's their choice. But I don't judge them, and I study with them, and I pray with them, and so my practice is such that I think it's a choice. It's not something I believe that should be coerced. That's just one example of at least within a religious tradition where there can be divisions and possible separateness. But it takes, I think, a certain enlightened stance to say there's different levels of practice and commitment.
And I think there's ways of being joined together even in particularity.
Mm-hmm.
In Juneau we have an interfaith council.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not about trying to convert each other. It's not about trying to proselytize to each other.
Right.
But in fact, it's about joining together in the midst of our particularity to do a common goal. And so I think that's a great distinction between that sort of coercive feel, like this is the only right way and you need to be a part of that, or here's how we are particularly Lutheran or Methodist or Jewish or Jehovah's Witness, but together we can do things for
finding
the greater
choice,
common
right.
good.
So I agree with that, and I think that it's good to celebrate particularism, and it's good to celebrate what we share together. And I think everyone has to find their right balance.
Right.
And it depends on how you see. Again, in Judaism, we not only have this old tradition, but we also have a language and we have other texts to learn and so forth. And that takes time. It doesn't mean we're rejecting others, but it means you want to spend time enjoying those aspects of tradition, make you particular. But those are things that can be also shared with others, just as a celebration of diversity in our community.
Right, and I think that's part of. I mean, you're Jewish because you like being particularly Jewish. I'm
right.
Lutheran because, and it's not that I did not explore other traditions or
right.
have worshipped with other people. It's that I just really like being a Lutheran and the things that Lutherans talk about and the ways we do church, and that's my particularity. So.
Right, and I just sort of end this. Question is mm-hmm. to say that I think most Americans, and I think certainly two of us, do believe strongly there are different paths to God, and that there's. So I have in my religious thinking rejected the idea of an exclusive path, and others are living in falsehood. Either there are, we have others who do believe that. I think it's a minority in our country, but I think that it's more difficult to have dialogue when you do believe you have exclusive truth. So we would be in the position of saying that recognizing a pluralistic world of religious faith.
And I think that's a big part of it, is trusting that the other person can remain in their particularity,
mm-hmm.
the way they're being particular, and still working together for a common cause or for the common good of the community. That was a great question.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much for your discussion.
You bet. And so we probably still have time for yet one more call, 463-6455. And
we do have
someone else
caller.
On the line. All right.
Oh,
hung up. Well, we probably took too long for that last one. All right. Thanks for calling. If you ever frustrated, we ask you to give us a call again, 463-6455. And so what do you think about the way religion has been expressed in as a foundation for some of our great folk? We've talked about this before, but how people like Martin Luther King Jr. were shaped. Oh, wait, we have
oh,
our
we
caller
have a
back.
Question. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. Both Christians and Jews need to deal with the question of evolution because our kids are taught about it in school but can't really learn about religion in public school. Can you speak to this imbalance? Because I think that relevance goes to the core of relevance in our young people today.
It's a good question, I think. Let me start with that one.
Okay.
I agree there's a problem in the teaching of religion in schools to the extent that I'm not certainly in favor of teaching one religion in schools, but teaching the importance of religion in the history of humanity and how various religious movements or ideas have shaped history. And I also think it's good to have comparative religions classes in schools so people can see the wide range of religious expression in the United States, which is a tremendous marketplace of religious ideas, if you want to call it that. So I strongly support the teaching of religion or comparative religion in the school, but I'm opposed to teaching one religion over others in the school, which I think violates the separation of church and state. As regards to evolution, I believe that science should be taught in the schools, but science should be presented as plausible theories, and students should understand the degree to which scientists support various theories. So I think if, for instance, my understanding of the scientific community is that evolution is considered a extremely plausible theory and accepted by the majority of scientists and presented in the context of a science class, there's no problem in presenting that way. But again, you have to say that science is an enterprise in which you're constantly testing those theories to see if there is a better explanation for the world around us. And so far, at this point, evolution is seen as the best way to understand the world we live in today. So that's my stance on it, and I certainly don't object to it being taught, but I do object to it being taught as a gospel truth, in the sense of
no pun intended.
Maybe I use that. Well,
maybe
I'm in trouble now.
Intended, yeah.
I'm in trouble now. But if it's taught as a truth, then I think you're going into a form of scientism, which is saying, well, as opposed to a scientific stance, this seems to be the most plausible theory for understanding the world until someone can prove otherwise, is the way all science should be presented to young minds. So that's what Sue speak to
well,
this issue.
Well, it is, obviously that specific topic is one of the more hot button topics right now. And how is that being decided? Sadly, it's being decided in courtrooms and in large church congregations that are pushing for a particular point of view. And I think that trying to figure out then that balance. You talked a long time ago about balance. Well, a long time ago within this hour about balance and how do we want our faith to live in an everyday way? And I think that might be part of what's the role of religion in today's society. How do we live our faith in an everyday way? And there are those people who say, because my faith is expressed in this particular way, that I believe that God created the world in so many years, thousands of years ago, in 7 days, that's how I want to live it through all expressions of my daily life, whether it's an educational life, whether it's, grocery shopping. That's part of my daily walk. The problem then is when it rubs up against someone else's understanding of how they live their daily life when they don't agree with those same fundamental premises.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I think society is we're wrestling. And it's a place to have conversation. And sadly, those conversations frequently get shut down with,
right.
You're right and I'm wrong. And so I guess maybe that's why we're hoping that this becomes a forum to have civil conversation about those hard things, about how do we live what is a faithful life or a religious life in our everyday walk with each other. Again, people, how are we going to agree on evolution when we can't order a pizza together? I want pepperoni, you don't. So I think it is quite the challenge. Those hot button topics are the ones, though, that tend to quell conversation. We tend to be so bound by what we want, the way we want it to be expressed, that we cut off the conversation and the openness towards exchange. And I think that's one of the goals that we have here, is that we want to continue to open up the exchange. Not about whether we're going to convince somebody to believe differently. That's not our purpose. But at least have a place to bounce those ideas around a little bit.
Right. I would just add that our mothers probably told us that you don't talk about religion in polite company.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really here to get rid of that.
We're not very polite.
We're not against mothers, but we're against that teaching. This religion should be discussed, and that's why I strongly support the teaching of the history religion and of comparative religions in public schools, because religion is a very important force in human history. It's a very important role in our society.
Right.
And to understand the way people believe is very important. So I think it's actually, I would recommend a book I just read called Religious Literacy that really deals with that question in a wonderful way about the failure of public schools to teach religion in the widest sense. So it's an interesting take on a debate, which I think is often, as Sue said, very polarized and very not a very thoughtful discussion.
Right, right. And we certainly invite the conversation and invite the discussion. But it is an interesting thing to talk about those particularities and what happens when your particularity bumps up against my particularity. Mm-hmm. How do we remain faithful and still working together in good and positive ways, rather than cutting off conversation or cutting off relationship?
Great. So we have just a couple more minutes. I don't think we can take any more questions at this point, but why don't we wrap up our discussion? We were talking about spirituality and religion.
I think those are maybe seeds that we can continue to develop for another conversation. I can't hardly believe that the hour is almost up, how exciting it is. Our first broadcast of One Lutheran, One Jew, and One Hour.
And we're going to stay with 1 hour. That's sure you've gotten frustrated with your pastor or your rabbi for speaking too long at services.
Lord have mercy. I can't bring a service in under an hour to save my soul. And I know a lot of people out there from my congregation are nodding right now. It's like, yeah, that's just not going to happen. But yes, here on the radio, we will continue to do that. So we appreciate the opportunity to have the conversation. And we invite you to continue to think about that question. One of the things about conversations is they don't end according to a timer. That notion of continuing to ponder, what is the role of religion in today's society? Does it truly have a place? Does it serve a function? Does it do anything positive still today? Because I think a role, we tend to frame it in ways that are positive. And so what are the positive ways that religion continues to serve? And again, these are age-old religions. I mean, mine's getting ready to celebrate its 500th year, and yours is getting ready to celebrate how many years?
We've lost count.
You lost count.
But I think that is something to explore, and I think you can also it's a real debate in the sense that there are people who argue that religion should have no role in society. Sam Harris, others who've written pretty serious critiques of religion. I think those books should be read. I think they sharpen the debate and sometimes make the debate very shrill. But I do think that they need to be considered as ideas.
And I do
as well.
Think that that's part of our conversation. That we are not merely cheerleaders for religion and faith, but we are willing to accept that there is critique and faithful and honest critique for the way that religion has sometimes distorted its role in society.
Absolutely. So there'll be more to come. And if you do want to contact us with questions or ideas about this program, we're going to be talking to K2 about future times and episodes, or not, I don't call it episodes.
Yeah, conversations.
Conversations.
And so, yes, your feedback, you can leave comments on ktoo.org. Or if you want to contact Dove Gartenberg.
You can contact my email is the one I'm using for this show is Alaska Shabbat House. It's all one word. Shabbat is Shabbat House, of course, house, at Outlook.com.
And I'm Pastor Sue Belita at Resurrection Lutheran Church, and I'm sbelita144@gmail.com. So we appreciate you being a part of our conversation. Thanks for everybody calling. Thanks to John and Dolly, our engineers, this evening. And we hope to hear you again for One Lutheran, One Jew, One Hour. Thanks and good night.
Thank you and blessings.